Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability Task Force. We will call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Christina Caraballo?
I'm here.
Terry O'Malley?
Here.
Stephen Lane?
Here.
Quinn McDonald? No Quinn yet. Brett Oliver?
Here.
Jim Calamoto?
Here.
Valerie Gray? Not Valerie yet. Laura Herman Langford? Not yet. Leslie
here.
Hall?
Leslie here. Hall? Here. Okay. Here, Leslie. Here, thank you.
Laura and Leslie, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Nancy Beaven? I saw Nancy on. We'll double check later. Kim Nolan?
Right. Kim called to say she couldn't make it today.
Okay, thank you. Rich Elmore?
Here.
Eric Heflin? I think he's going to be late as well. Dan Breeman? No Dan yet. Mike Peretta?
Here.
And Rob Havasay?
Here.
Okay. Christina and Terry, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, hello, everyone. Christina, do you want to start off or me? What do you prefer?
It doesn't matter. I guess I can. So since Terry so graciously took a lead of our presentation this morning, thank you, Terry. So today we are going to discuss the HITECH presentation today and the slides that we delivered earlier. The specific charge was how the USCDI would be expanded and by how much. That's what we're going to look at today. Sorry, I'm committee meeting about today. But so that's what we're going to kind of discuss today as our next agenda item. Earlier, we focused on providing our draft recommendations for the proposed categories. And so now we're going to kind of move forward with the next three areas. So today we'll discuss the expansion process, share the preliminary recommendations that we presented in today's meeting, and have the goal of determining the criteria for expansion, looking at next week's discussion being to confirm this criteria. So if we can move on to the next slide, please. So I guess at this point, we can give an overview of the HITECH presentation. We received really good feedback and had a few comments that were made, but not too many. We went through our specific charges at the beginning. Sorry, give me 1 second. Basically, starting, we reviewed each of the categories. We introduced the three new stages that the task force has proposed, and we put it into a format where each slide was formatted in a similar way for the proposed categories, starting with the principal purpose of the category and what it does, moving to what is needed for entry into the category.
Enter your access code or meeting number, followed by...
Oh, excuse me. Can people hear me, or did I...
No, you're doing fine.
We can hear
okay.
You. We can hear you.
My phone kind of, something was going on. It asked me for an access code. Okay, so, sorry. Going back to the slide format, the third high-level area that we had was what happens in the middle, and then what it takes to get to the next category. So we clearly defined that with each of the proposed stages. Terry, did you have anything to add as a high-level overview of today's meeting?
Not so much anything to add, but it's more just to toss it back to the task force. Sort of, were there things that you guys thought were missing? You think there were things that were brought up that we haven't paid attention to? Any general or specific comments about the content? So it's really an opportunity to sort of hash through what happened for those of you who sat through it.
I thought you guys did a great job. This is Stephen, and really appreciated the way you laid it out. I thought it was very understandable and well received. I did want to just comment that there was a public comment that was registered by somebody where they suggested that we think about a process for retiring items from the US CDI if they become outdated and no longer necessary. And I just thought we should put that in a parking lot somewhere to come back to.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, this is Brett. I would 100% agree with that. We could find ourselves several years down the road with more data for at least the providers and nurses than they can handle, especially in finding things duplicative. So I would like to eventually talk about some process to remove a data element.
Great. Who's up? Ken?
Yeah, hi. I enjoyed this morning's meeting. I think everyone gave great presentations. I think the TEFCA folks brought it up too, but I think having a formal way to get some of their requirements into what this subcommittee is doing, I think would be useful, just to make sure that things don't get lost in translation or whatnot, because I think supporting what they're doing is going to be important for us.
Yeah. Agree. And Laura, you're up.
Yeah, just to comment on the retiring, I completely agree with that and would support us looking at that. And there's an implied in the presentation we had in kind of our processes, but the whole concept of review, I think we need to be sure is really strong in there, because if we're not reviewing it, the retiring, I mean, our process really talks about new things and the annual release, but I don't know that we've talked a lot about that review. So I just wanted to be sure we highlight that, because mm-hmm. we could put a whole, this is how you retire an item, but if there's not a process of reviewing it, you'll never get them retired.
Yeah, this is a really interesting area, and worthy of as much time as we can give it. We may not be able to give it all we want between now and April 18th, but okay, great. And Leslie.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, a couple of comments. First of all, I think Arian and the group on the TEFCA talked about the what and the how a lot, and I think it was a great reminder of the work that we're doing, which is the how, and should be aligned with TEFCA's, I think, open-ended committee's response that talked about making sure the processes were pretty consistent and that there was ways to have the technology considered without having it an overdue burden. And so I think that was good and mindful approach that we could be compatible with in our recommendations. And I'd like to also talk about Christina's idea in the meeting in response to TEFCA that would also apply to this. And it's back to the idea that there really is no logical sponsor for the patient. They don't have the same commercial gravitas as the industry. And so although both of the recommendations started with an industry ecosystem and commercial friendly, having a way to be very deliberate on how data in our process or data is considered for interoperability and movement in data exchange, there needs to be an overarching and deliberate approach. Christina recommended that there might be a QHIN, for instance, dedicated to that. Perhaps we need to consider either a deliberate process or a distinctly different process in our recommendations. I think we've hashed that through a bit. I think that Clem was the one who said, hey, guys, let's just make sure it considers all stakeholders in whatever we do. But we often have said that in the past, and the patient still gets left out. So I would like the group to consider or discuss how do we make sure, both in this process and in recommendations, we might cross-collateralize with the TEFCA team, that the patient voice, considerations, sponsorship is deliberately inserted into these processes.
Right. Thanks, Leslie. And Michael, you're up.
Hi, everybody. I hope this isn't too off-key. I think the materials look pretty good. They made sense. They followed the logical progression. There were no surprises. The only thing that I put this in an email was, I think we'd be well served with a graphic. I think I've seen a couple of graphics that walk through the different progressive steps of getting data classes up to the USCDI. Something that would be pretty helpful. Lastly, I think we'd also be well served if we included some examples. I mocked up something about like immunization data and progressing that up to the USCDI. Something like that, and explain the criteria of how those data classes move up the ladder would be helpful, I think.
Yeah, that would be great, and thanks for volunteering all of that. And that comment made me think about some potential homework and kind of what's the reaction to taking the current draft set of data classes and each of us kind of laying it out where we think it currently fits in this progression.
Oh, please don't blame me for creating homework.
Well, I had to lay it off on somebody, you know. But it's no good deed goes unpunished. But, you know, is that something you think we'd
that is
get up somewhere?
Oh, sorry. I think I preemptively almost answered a question that you didn't ask.
Okay.
I was going to say I'd be happy to help out as best I can with either graphic or the examples. I think it'd be beneficial to have those examples. But I'd love to hear what everyone else would think.
Yeah, I think it'll make the graphic richer and it'll support, I think that'll support a discussion next month about, you know, the sort of the timeline discussion. You know, how long does it take to get through the process? You know, well, it depends on where you are in the process and where you start. And then that, in my mind, circles us back to Leslie's point about advocacy for the patient's issues and point of view, and how do we make sure that happens? Because there's likely to be the least amount of push behind those elements unless they have broad value to somebody else. At least that's a concern.
I'd also like to add that I definitely agree that we need mechanisms to make sure that we consider patients as an active participant of the USCDI authorship. We can't have the Epics and Cerners of the world coming across and saying, you know, X percent of the U.S. population has a record in Epic, so we Epic or we Cerner should be the ones to dictate how the USCDI is drafted. I think that's an unfair way to move forward. So I definitely agree with that and would echo that like here.
I would agree with that too. And also to Leslie's point, I think something else that you brought up, Leslie, was just having that voice. And one of the things that Denise mentioned was that she proposed sharing the use cases that are in the TEF with the USCDI and looking at how we ensure that the work being done on both is maps to one another or is done kind of in unison as opposed to fragmented, since they're very dependent on one another. So one of the things Terry and I were looking at is how we ensure that our work fits into the TEFCA and some of the recommendations that were being made for the TEFCA.
Yeah, before I call on you, let me just make another comment on that. And that the two potential data classes where we really overlap a lot with the TEFCA are sort of unique patient identifiers, sort of data matching data set. What do you need to do that as best as we can? And then the other is sort of the individual's permissions of use for their data authorization. And those might be basic building blocks for patient engagement. And that's kind of our initial thoughts. But Leslie?
Yeah, I think that's great that you guys talked to the other team chairs and are going to really work on cross-pollinating these recommendations. And there was one thing that Denise mentioned that they've recommended that in the RCE as well as in QHINs, there's patient representation. And I think that goes a long way. But we know that also what goes a long way is how budgets are resourced to support or stakeholders that are not well represented, like the patient. So I would ask that ONC provide us with how will they support these recommendations once approved in terms of resources that are being allocated? And then furthermore, ask ONC to specifically then state how much of that budget will be as they're acting as advocates for the patients they serve as government of the people. I think that would be important to then allow us to react to that. And perhaps even ask that as a general question overall at the HITAC committee, is what are those resource groupings coming from ONC to promote this work?
Yeah, great comments. It makes me think that we might try to turn the HITAC meeting into something a little different and create a slide with a series of questions to ask of ONC and the HITAC rather than having them ask us questions. But
yep.
Let's think about that. That would be number one on the slide, probably. Okay. Any other thoughts or comments or concerns or omissions or stuff we ought to be paying attention to? Okay, well, we can always swing by if someone gets a new thought. So maybe we go on to the next slide, whatever that is. Oh, okay. So this is our work for today. So let me explain this a little bit, because you guys only got to see this week. And first of all, our apologies to the task force for presenting something that we'd not really discussed in any detail, and certainly not with any set of firm conclusions or consensus. So I tried to acknowledge that, but it, you know, this comes across as a recommendation. So anyway, here's what we recommended. So maybe we want to talk a little bit about, you know, are these the recommendations we want to make for the expansion? Are they the right ones? Are should they be tweaked, turned, removed? Do we need more? Are we happy with them and we'll just go ahead? So.
Do we understand what the levers are that ensure that this work gets done once it becomes part of the U.S. CDI?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that, you know, there are lots of policy levers. So that, for example, CMS can say that when you're reporting data for XYZ, this is what you have to report. You know, it'll be in the U.S. CDI. So it's things like that that are tied to payment, to regulation, to quality measurement. So kind of the typical way ONC gets things done. That's my understanding of the process. Happy to hear anyone else's. Leslie?
Yeah, I just have a clarifying question. Is expansion in this case meaning more and deliberate volume of the existing standard recommendation or width of charge, breadth of charge, adding more functionality and more data across the US CDI? Which one or both?
Yeah, that's a good question. Christina, do you have an answer?
Looking at your question come through one more time. Would you mind repeating the question?
No, I'm asking whether expansion is adding more levers that make that particular US CDI data structure or data class go to scale, or is expansion mean the breadth of data classes included, or both?
I don't know. Would it be a combination? I would think it would be a combination.
Yeah, I think so too.
And then I think that would mean then in our recommendations, as we go from stages, which basically implies a more expanded use of that data class to get to scale, we would have some way to have an inserted process that allows at each stage for that particular data class to get more expanded. So for instance, the notes example. So we say that notes should come through as this particular US CDI, and in the original recommendation at the very beginning, that note looks like it's pretty much an ambulatory note. But by the time it might get to another stage, other organizations or sponsors have included new ideas for notes that might mean the operating note inside an inpatient facility. So that adds breadth. So we would need then to have a deliberate process that includes adding breadth to a particular data class through either new additional stakeholders or expansion of definition. And then also, as you go through the process, the ability to move to scale.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that that kind of goes into the criteria to move through the US CDI and not the expansion itself. But with the way we're kind of the task force has looked at it in our discussions is in order to move through the criteria, you have to actually advance by meeting the criteria that we're going to determine in each of the stages. So I don't want to confuse the actual expansion of the USCDI, meaning how we get data classes in each of the categories with the process of them moving through.
Yeah, Leslie, I think this process is not really clear in my mind, and nor is how it will be supported or where it's going to take place, or, you know, is it sort of an S&I-like project where a group of stakeholders get together virtually around a proposed data class and hash out what it ultimately looks like? But I suspect if the process is anything like that, it'll mean there'll be some juggling. There'll be certainly there'll be a need to find enough content in the data class to increase the value of getting it, but not so much content that it really increases the cost of getting it, you know, which would defeat the net value proposition. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out, and I'm not quite sure how we wrap clear guidelines around that process, but we'll need to think about it.
Thanks.
No, you're welcome. Steven.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions, and I think I know the answers, but I just thought I'd get them out on the table. One was whether or not there was a minimum time that we felt that a data type needed to spend in any one of the sort of stages of advancement, and whether there was any interdependence of the items, you know, in a given stage or in stages along the way. And the reason I'm asking these questions is I think that it's important that we develop a process that's sufficiently nimble to be able to respond really quickly if there is a new data type that emerges that we feel needs to be fast-tracked through the process. So as I think about expansion, I think, you know, one thing we want to be sure, you know, because the world changes so quickly around us sometimes, is that we do have some sort of a fast track mechanism, and that we don't have, you know, artificial or unnecessary checks along the way that might limit our ability to respond in that way.
So your initial question is, do you think there's any timeline, are there any minimum or maximum time any data class spends in a particular stage? Is that
right? That and whether, again, what I was really trying to get at was if something shows up and is really important and we want to fast track it, is there going to be any problem with it kind of jumping through the stages quickly or jumping ahead of other items that have been sitting in a given stage for a given period of time?
That actually made me think of something different. I think that excellent point that we wanted it to be very flexible, and I don't think that there was a specific timeline for the data classes to progress through each category. What you said with the maximum time just made me think maybe we should have a part of our recommendations that if a data class is in a category for X amount of months or years, that it's flagged so that we can say, why is this stagnant and does this belong here? And that'll also let us look at kind of making sure that we're evaluating if there are still needs for the data classes that as they progress. Kind of like another check and balance.
And Christina, that makes me think that we really need a
a clear process for how that's done, you know, aka S&I framework. Because it needs a process that then has a goal at the end and says, okay, gang, by 3 months from now, we need to have a, you know, highly specified data set. And if it doesn't, then it goes back. You know, so the other thing this makes me think of is that there's no reason why classes can't be kicked down to the earlier stage for more work, for more rework. You know, and that this doesn't have to be a unidirectional process. Except hopefully once you get into USCDI, the only way is nationwide deployment. Okay, more things to think about. Rich.
Terry, I was thinking about your description of what the assumed levers are for this, and I think some examples you used were, you know, I kind of interpreted it as being a CMS initiative that they want to accomplish something or something associated with the payment reform that might drive some of this activity. And I think there's a kind of a fundamental point that I'd be interested in getting the view of the task force on, which is the approach that I'm seeing here is kind of a build it and they will come over time, iteratively, you know, working through the data classes based on priorities, systematically doing it. And it's a little too theoretical for my taste. I'm wondering if we should have a different view of the USCDI, which is to say that there's some new initiative, you know, some new way in which CMS wants to capture information, wants to be able to, you know, have information reported, whatever it might be. And a necessary sequence to that strategy of theirs is going to be to run through a USCDI process for, you know, and they have to be able to defend kind of the value and that it makes sense and all that. But it gives kind of a practical side of this, and I think it ties into the levers that you were talking about as being what really can drive USCDI. And so I think it's a different model than, you know, a conceptual, theoretical, I don't know who the really smart approver is that sits on top of that as a regulatory body, but it feels like it's going to take a long time, and at the end of the day, I'm not sure who's going to receive value for the work that's being delivered.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That concerns me too, sort of who's the convener, who's the sponsor, who's supporting, who's pushing any particular data class, you know, and sort of the weight of the market might be one mechanism, one flawed and incomplete mechanism, but short of some criteria that says, you know, this is bubbled up sufficiently high that we should pay attention to it. You know, it's a little seedling. It needs water. It needs sun. It needs fertilizer. How do we get it to blossom? Without that, I too don't understand the process.
Yeah, I think we have a very long we've seen this movie many times before where there's an initiative and there's kind of high aspirational goals and there are really, really smart people in healthcare. But the execution and kind of, you know, getting it to actually work in a practical sense and then getting it to scale, I mean, takes some focus, you know, some organization, some groups that need to coalesce around that to say, hey, we want to try and make this happen. And, you know, I don't know that USCDI is the focal point. I think it's, you know, supporting infrastructure for other initiatives. I'm putting it out there kind of assertively to kind of provoke to get the conversation going. I mean, I'm not sure I feel as, you know, strong as perhaps my comments came across, but turn it over to others.
Yeah, good point.
Okay. So, Laura?
Yeah, thank you. I completely agree with the previous speaker. I, too, am thinking through how do we keep this real? How do we keep it nimble? When we were talking about the process and, you know, we don't really know what that is, I think that gets back to my earlier comments about needing to understand the review. And even in that, when I think about the review, some earlier comments, you know, do we set guidelines or do we set rules? I mean, we've got to have some, and there has to be a body that is doing some oversight on this, but it needs to be maybe, I don't know. I mean, I participated a lot with the S&I framework initiatives and different things there. And I'm not sure they always became real. I'm not sure they were always something that was really implemented. And so when you think about this as, you know, create it and they will come, well, they will if it's helpful. Otherwise, it'll take regulation. And so I think that's where we have to kind of, you know, try and find that sweet spot. If we can keep it nimble, keep it real, keep it something that's helpful to get to the end goals, then I think it would need regulation because people are desperate to find tools and solutions that help fix some of these problems. But if we put it out there in a way and make it so heavy or onerous or not real, like, and by not real meaning, like, I still go back to the original set that's out there is the USCDI, and it's like, you know, I'm not even sure all of those items would pass these phases that we've put in. I mean, they may need to go in and be evaluated and say, what phase are they in? So that gets a little bit of more reality to it. Don't have any answers here. I'm just throwing out some other thoughts. Thank you.
Well, welcome to the next round of homework. Yeah, we'll see where they stack up. Leslie?
Well, perhaps we could look at the structure that is being recommended as part of TEFCA and see, is that a governing structure that would be sufficiently neutral, would provide a voice for the patient if tweaked, and can evaluate, especially on volume of use and end users through that process. I don't know that that's the right answer, but it's certainly offering up a structure that has regulatory authority, implementation authority, and nationwide interoperability. So perhaps when you two speak with the TEFCA chairs, you could ask, how could this be considered? And it might not be the right answer, but it might be worth consideration. I, too, fear that we've played the same movie over and again, and yet the work is important to be done. Thanks.
Yeah, amen. Rich.
So a minor point on the last bullet. I think interoperability standards advisory probably will create some confusion, in that is – think of it more as a inventory with some indicators of maturity and other aspects of, you know, a particular standard. I think that what we're trying to do here should not be an inventory. We have too many of those. I think it's got to be, you know, the very narrow list that, you know, actually warrants work and focus to try and get it right, constrained enough so that it can actually be delivered, you know, very, very focused. So just for all those kinds of reasons, I think I'm not debating whether or not, at least not with this comment, whether or not there's a regulatory oversight element. I'm not sure I understand yet what the drivers are going to be. So maybe it's premature to be talking about regulatory oversight. But I think ISA, I would just recommend maybe that it may confuse.
Yeah, and that was something I threw in, and I agree. It's not that we're building another ISA. It's that the ISA has support and guidance and oversight and is being run daily by ONC, and that we kind of need the same thing. And that's what regulatory body oversight, that all means. Not very clear. I agree, that could be. Something will be done with that. Well,
Another thing that
and Terry.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, just a little more also to build on the clarity on that regulatory body oversight and the reference to ISA. When we were discussing this, one thing came up. It's not that ONC is managing it. It's that, you know, under the ISA, they're bringing together the right stakeholders, creating the proper work groups to address issues as they arise. So it's that type of oversight where someone owns the document to look at the gaps, look at what needs to be moved so that they can convene the right folks, like in task force like this one, to kind of continue with the momentum. So that's what we were thinking, in addition to what Terry said, by the regulatory body oversight requirement. So it doesn't just sit on a shelf.
Thank you, Christina. So I have another somewhat different thought about what we should be doing to get items through to the USCDI. And that's to look at almost look at the business case. You know, why does this have value to anyone, and what is the value that it has? And if it doesn't have sufficient value, then it has no business being advanced. Maybe we need a higher bar on value, because if you know, we can put, to Leslie's point earlier, we've seen this movie before. We put a lot of things out. They've been driven through standards, and no one uses them because, well, you know, there's just not really a compelling business case behind it at this point. So, you know, what if we were to say, to ask, yeah, well, how are you going to use this? What is it going to mean to you? What's the benefit that's going to come to you? Would you use it if it were created? And if the answer is no, then next data set, please. But really get to the real driver through this process, which is going to be the ultimate value to the end user. And if they don't see enough value, then why are we building it? Leslie.
I don't think it's a binary or single recipient, single sender kind of thing. It's multiple stakeholders, and there could be, I can't remember who made the point, the cost and the actual value could have uneven burden and benefit. I think that's just life and interoperability. So how do you count the number of stakeholders that it positively or negatively impacts? And are those counts weighed, or are they counted, depending upon who that stakeholder might be? So it's important that we define what value means and the value to which stakeholder involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rich.
Thinking about the prioritization criteria that we've been talking about and the way it's developed, and thinking about the last two speakers' comments here, I'm wondering if, as opposed to having a funnel, we've got a sieve. Is too much falling through that we haven't really helped to narrow the focus to you know, heighten the chance for success, to you know, do we need to do something to make the prioritization criteria more of a funnel?
What would you do? You have an example or a, you know?
Well, I think there are some. I would say that there are probably some gates at any of the stages of maturity. I mean, I think it's probably, you know, I don't have something, you know, formulated, but, you know, I think that it's a certain point in time, You would need to know that both the standards that exist are in production use before it's going to be able to move to a subsequent class. You know, so it, various classes are going to be, you know, be various gates on this that are just going to be important. You know, is it being captured within current workflows or is it available electronically? I think those are going to be, you know, critical to passing some other gates. And maybe the you know, the workflow suggestion, the diagrammatic suggestion, and putting these things more in as, you know, criteria for advancement as opposed to prioritization criteria. Some of them are more qualitative than others are more, you know, kind of sort of black and white. You know, I think that, you know, so capturability, you know, all of that, you know, and ability to be captured, all those kinds of things, I think, would fit into kind of a straightforward yes, no criteria.
And do you think there's, you know, sort of, how do we weigh the aggregate stakeholders, you know, where do they come up on the scale?
Well, I think that's our job. I kind of feel like so far we haven't really grappled with that. And it is probably smart not to try and do that right out of the gate. But I do think we have to grapple with it, or I don't think we're helping ONC with the work of prioritization.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long, dark, twisting rabbit hole.
Isn't that what they're asking for, Terry? I mean, isn't that what ONC is looking for in this process? Is partly that?
Yeah, maybe. No, but, you know, do all stakeholders weigh the same? That was sort of Leslie's point. And Leslie, please jump in.
Well, perhaps the criteria that we select would equalize the uneven stakeholders rather than weighing the same. So, for instance, you could have likelihood of adoption by patients, likelihood of adoption by providers, likelihood of adoption by payers, et cetera, for each stakeholder. Feasibility, political viability, potential to foster new use cases for broad number of stakeholders, a low potential for negative or unintended negative consequences, things like sustainability, or something that says it improves exchange overall if adopted. So not just this particular item, but it improves exchange. It betters other use cases, and it expands multiple stakeholders. So I think we could potentially get to the weighting by articulating the criteria in ways that evens the playing field.
Interesting approach. And again, how do we... That's a different metric, and there's going to be issues with how we measure that. But that's the same issues that are going to exist for whatever metric we try to come up with. You know, no one's come up with a universal value scale that I'm aware of. Well, while we're thinking, let me just go back through this slide from the top and sort of see if the thinking that led to what's on the slide makes sense. And so the limit on new additions to the USCDI was really an attempt not to overburden the implementers. This was a pitch to the vendors and saying, you know, we're going to overwhelm them if we drive so many data classes into the USCDI that they just don't have the bandwidth to adapt
their systems in a reasonable time. Now, I think, Rich, that's something you, maybe I'm taking, putting words in your mouth, but the idea that we need to be sensitive to this final gate, which is the USCDI, which we viewed as being, once you're in there, everything that the feds can do to move this data class through is going to be done. So is that a reasonable concern? Any objections to that? Yeah, Eric?
Yeah, so not to your specific question, but I can actually wait till others go if you want, so you can cover your question. I had a comment about a prior concept.
Go ahead.
Okay, sorry, I didn't want to interrupt your flow.
No.
On slide five, I think one thing is missing here from my perspective, and perhaps it's covered elsewhere, which is I do think we should have some type of a definition of success, because all these recommendations to me look like they're very difficult to measure. You know, how do we know if you achieved anything? How do we know if we've met the requirements we're trying to meet? And I think that all could be accommodated with one additional bullet, which is that if the rest of the work group feels the same, which is that the expansion should be based on use cases.
And you, by being based on use cases, you're meaning successfully demonstrating, you know, feasibility.
Meaning, that to elaborate, that specifically a use case or a group of use cases should be analyzed and brought forth and approved by an appropriate entity. Such as the industry or the ONC, or perhaps the ideally a combination of the ONC and the industry. And then the USCDI expansion should be applied to conduct a gap analysis to determine if any of the priority-based use cases, starting from the most important use case number one through the next use case and so on in priority-based order, have any gaps that are data-related. If so, that would inform the USCDI expansion by saying, for example, this national priority use case number one had three data gaps in terms of use case or in terms of data sets, you know, code systems, value sets, and therefore we recommend that that be addressed and perhaps that these specific value sets be used accommodate this priority use case, and et cetera, et cetera. So essentially what that gives us is a mechanism for saying, A, this data set is, or code system really, is relevant and important and should be done, and B, it lets us determine whether or not we have additional gaps or potentially, and maybe even worse, overlaps, where there are multiple data sets that could be used to satisfy the given requirements of a given priority-based use case. So a use case gives us a method of judging whether we are done or not.
Yeah. Eric, to that point, we're hearing use cases come up a lot. And at the beginning we looked at use cases and stakeholders and found there were a lot of both. I'm wondering if in order to track this, instead of identifying the use case and then putting a data class under that, for each of our use cases or for each of our data classes, maybe we could suggest as part of the framework, we actually list identified use cases that the data class supports. So then it doesn't become about one use case, but more, but clearly shows how a data class that can support multiple use cases, and then it maps it just in the reverse way.
I agree, Stephen.
Mm-hmm. So this is Eric. Perhaps I'm kind of curious why Stephen agrees on that, and also why you're suggesting that. And I think in principle, to kind of cut to the chase in my comments, I think that could work as well. But I'm kind of curious why you two are advocating that the data be mapped to use case instead of a use case mapped to a requirement to have a associated data set.
You've got the floor, Christina.
Well, I mean,
I spoke out of turn.
Articulating in my chaos of the snow day and my fuzz brain. Sorry, it goes back to that concept of the fact that we want this framework to support multiple stakeholders and scale well. So if one of the fundamental things that we've discussed is that if we can show kind of like that not the loudest voice gets what they want, but the collective voice has a say in what kind of progresses through the USCDI and what's important and what the industry should be looking at. I think that's where I think that identifying use cases under a data class so we can clearly see and the industry can understand that by creating this data class, these are the benefits to all of these multiple people, as opposed to just focusing on one use case. I think it enables us to look at the data class more broadly, especially as we think of how it's used across the nation, but it doesn't take away from actually still continuing to ensure that we're focusing on very important use cases as they're identified and as they arise, or even the ones that we know.
Well, Stephen and Christina, I wonder if we could combine those two concepts, and perhaps we could suggest that we as a task force recommend mapping to use cases both ways. That way, a use case, you know, we can, through that process, determine if there's a gap that we or others can help remediate, where, for example, there is no value set that can express what's needed. And then also we can do, as you just mentioned, which is to show the broad applicability or narrow, you know, as appropriate for given data classes. Would that make sense?
Yeah,
I'm trying to hold my fire until I'm called upon.
No comment.
Go ahead.
trying to be good. I think that, you know, sort of looking at it both ways makes sense, Eric. I think the reason that I chimed in to support Christina is that in my experience, sometimes if you put the use cases up front, it sometimes leads to unnecessary delay and just more discussion than I think is always warranted. I mean, sometimes it's very valuable. And it may be that just as a clinician, my view of this is pretty simplistic, but I see so many opportunities, you know, under the rubric of the treatment use case. You know, we just have all kinds of data elements, the vast majority that were included in the draft USCDI, that all just kind of fall under the treatment use cases. And I just wouldn't want to hold up our process while we spend a lot of time writing up, you know, sort of sub-use cases and whatnot. I mean, just taking care of patients is plenty of use case for me to want to push these things through the process. I think that's probably what I was expressing, was that viewpoint and prejudice.
Well, this is Eric. If that makes sense, and the reason I'm really very much focused on that is, even though I'm a technologist, I always feel that projects that start with technology tend to not be as successful as ones that start with a clinical or business objective to be accomplished. And so that's why I tend to philosophically think of everything that we're trying to do as an industry really being driven by essentially our goals that we have in mind. So, okay, well, thank you.
And Laura, you've been extremely patient.
That's okay. I keep forming thoughts as these folks are talking. It all kind of fits. My first comment was going to be talking about the point that talks about limit of new additions, but the use case discussion, I think, really goes to that. I can see both points of view, and I think I value both points of view. I think I can support them both. But I think if we look at even our criteria, use cases were somewhat called out in there. So I think we have to, I guess I'm looking at the use case seems like a chicken and an egg problem here, which one comes first and which one. And so we probably do need to accommodate both. The thing that I was thinking with use cases as well is this whole point, to go back to when we're looking at the slide, there should be a limit on new additions. I'm a little bit hesitant to say that that's a recommendation because it implies that somebody should go out there and create, what's that limit? Is it 50 things? Is it 100? And I don't think that we mean that. I think that we mean judicious additions, and that would be supported by need use cases. And, you know, anything that's in there already is something that we say we need use cases. And so, you know, we may not have use cases that support everything because we just said, well, we need it, but we probably could come up with them. But do we need to take the time to do it? I get that point as well. Maybe not. But if you look at our process, I think we have a lot of implications saying that a use case is bringing us things. And so I agree with the point that we probably need to consider both points of view when it comes to the use case application. But to get back to where we were on that slide, I think we need to be very careful about saying there's a limit. I think we need to word it in a way that we don't need a line drawn. We just need to be careful to not overburden places unnecessarily.
Yeah, and I think the thought, if there was one behind that, was the limit would be, I mean, someone would have to decide and take the temperature of industry and say, you know, they're frazzled and they're not going to do another thing right now. So it may be less, the break point, the gate might not be getting into USCDI. It might be moving within USCDI to full deployment, that along that pathway, there's going to be some gates based on bandwidth and sort of industry pushback. I don't know if that is consistent with what you're saying.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I can see that and agree to it. I think, though, with that bullet point in mind, we probably need to look at our stages and understand at what point is that considered if the industry is unable to absorb any more. I mean, it may be that we've accommodated that enough in, it'd be around stage 5, I think. But again, I just wanted, you know, as far as a recommendation, I would hate to see that we state there should be a limit and then a body after it comes by and say, well, it was recommended we have a limit, so let's set a number.
Yes,
I mean, that's not our intent. Our intent is really about what's useful to people and to be judicious about it, to not overdo it. And I think you're right. It'll be natural as we kind of go through the stages. But let's look at our stages again and say, have we carefully articulated this in a way that it's understood?
Yeah, that's a good idea. So there needs to be another bullet in there that clarifies, just really not a, well, anyway, we'll thank you. Point well taken. We'll do something.
Yeah, and as a reminder, as we talk about the use cases, and Eric, you brought up that, you know, it's not just to build technology for the sake of it, but actually serve a purpose. And the very first step that we've put together as a task force, as a reminder, is that it has to be important to someone to get into stage 1, which is our just proposed status, to even start the evaluation process. So I think we've built that in at the very beginning. And we've even put it in that it's down to the data element level that you can propose for a use case in order to capture that. So I just wanted to throw that in as well, I think we have organically wrapped in the fact that we need to serve
a purpose or a greater good throughout our recommendations and should continue to do that in each area.
Hmm. Well put. Stephen. And Nancy.
No, I think I'm caught up. Sorry if my hand is still up.
Okay. Nancy.
I just wanted to say that I'm supportive of the conversation around limit of not having limits. It doesn't seem that that meets our purpose to say that we're going to limit a number of entries to the USCDI. From a business perspective, though, and an implementer perspective, for me, it's more about priorities. And I'm not sure how that would ever happen, but if we do not have limits, and there's, you know, lots of opportunity to implement new data classes, it's when you get down right down to it, the implementers are going to have to look at priorities. And so I'm just wondering if that's something we should have some kind of discussion around.
Yeah, good question. And who's going to set the priorities? You know, who's going to orchestrate industry? If that can be done.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but I do think it comes back to the conversation that we were having much earlier around, you know, how does this get, what's the structure around the implementation of the USCDI?
Okay. All right. Hmm. Okay. This has been a fascinating discussion. Eric?
So a couple of thoughts that might help in bullet one. First of all, I'm not sure how to measure the word overburdened. You know, how do we ascertain that we are, quote, overburdening, quote, you know, the industry or segments of the industry? The second thing, so I'm a little uncomfortable with that word for that reason, that it's a little unmeasurable. The second thing is, again, referencing the bullet one here under preliminary task force recommendations, is there is some methodologies that perhaps we could employ to help solve this, because what we're really talking about here is capacity, and that capacity has a couple of you know, groups. USCDI group, for example, we have a certain probably capacity of how much we could assess in a given activation of the task force. There's an amount of capacity that various market segments could adopt, various standard bodies could curate, and so on. So there's methodologies, though, for handling that, one of which we use, for example, for IHE work groups where we face this issue every year, is we simply evaluate the potentials every year. We then assess them based on criteria that we talked about, I think, very nicely in our prior two phone calls. And then a force-ranked list is the output of that evaluation process, which will include things such as difficulty in implementation, value to industry, maturity, things like, you know, implementability, you know, things like that. And then the output of that is a force-ranked list of those candidates for, say, this cycle. And then at some point, an appropriate body, perhaps the USCDI internally does this for ourselves, says our capacity for this cycle is to look at, you know, 10 or 50 or 5 data classes. And then the line is simply drawn by the prioritization and then by the capacity of the work group that's actually curating that.
Okay, that is great. And I think that's actually a better set of criteria to use on the point that was trying to be made. It really is about capacity. So would you mind articulating on paper what you just said so that we'll look at it and try to plug it in? Because I think that would be an important addition to the slide.
Yeah, I'll be glad to try it. I would perhaps say something along the lines of the amount of data class recommendations added each cycle should be a function of priorities and capacity of the various stakeholders, including the evaluation work groups, or something to that effect, if that sounds about right.
Yeah, and perhaps even some detail about what, you know, sort of what would go into those rankings, the prioritization.
Okay, well, I'm glad to, glad to take a stab at that for the work group to consider.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks. Robert.
Yeah, good timing, actually, because I think I was going to build on what you and Eric just said. I'm wondering if we've actually created the feedback mechanism we need for this kind of throttling with our addition of stage six, right? So if we look at sort of the ratio of anything that's made it from the USCDI into widespread deployment, right? At some point, if only 10% of the USCDI is in widespread deployment, that's a signal that something's wrong. We've put too much into the pipe and industry can't handle it, or our criteria are off, we're suggesting things that aren't working. And so perhaps a sort of simple throttling mechanism is to look at that ratio and if it ever gets over some threshold, right? If you know, the USCDI has 100 elements in it and only 30 of them are in widespread deployment, so 70% aren't making it, that triggers a process of reprioritization or going back to look at the criteria or something. But I'm just wondering if structurally we haven't already created a signal that we're either pushing too much through or pushing the wrong things through.
Maybe so. That's interesting. Okay, but thank you.
I mean, unless we think that the intent of stages 1 through 4 are to identify things that are so forward thinking that we know we're going to put a lot out that's going to take a long time to reach widespread deployment. But maybe there's something there.
Yeah, I think the stages, the gates at each stage, seemed very logical. And the last gate, getting into the USCDI, I think you're only going to get there if most of the standards work and the technical work and the testing has already been done. So it's not an issue that you've got to go out and develop everything to make this useful and usable. It's that everything is in place. It's a question now of how do you implement on what all the work that's been done to get into the USCDI. So that's my take on that level. So then the capacity issue is really one, it's an implementation capacity. Can I take this body of work and now make it work in my system? Is that close to reality, or is that?
Certainly sounds right to me.
Okay. And Leslie?
Yeah, I'm struck with the idea that capacity changes when technology is useful. For instance, who knew I would like to actually watch on my Delta app that my bags are about to come down the luggage rack. The capacity does change. So for instance, as a patient becomes more involved in data exchange, they can bring huge efficiency to organizations. So for an example, in a 300-bed hospital, there might be as many as 15 people in pre-admission and testing. Of those people involved in pre-admission and testing, let's say 60% of the data is actually gathered directly from the patient in verbal interviews that could be supplanted by patient-generated health data. Perhaps that's then a drop in FTEs in pre-admission and testing for the administrative burden of half or even 30%, would be dramatic shift. And so although the capacity for implementation might say, whoa, that's, it's going to be tough to implement data exchange for pre-visit preparation information from patient-generated health data, the long-term effect of reducing the burden, administrative burden for collecting that data would be absolutely dramatic. So capacity in this case has shifted. So the capacity for implementation is offset by a shift in capacity from the pre-admission testing staff to the actual patient doing the patient-generated health data. So let's make sure as we weigh these things and look at these things that the capacity is reflected not just in singular burden of implementation, but capacity shifting.
Interesting. It's going to find its way into a use case somewhere, no doubt. Eric, and then Rich.
I just wanted to mention that I put my comments as per your request, Jerry, into the chat window.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much. That's great. You get, well, you don't get a pass on this week's homework, but you get an extra credit check somewhere. So, Rich.
There may not be optionality for developers, but I think that there should be optionality for the production users of USCDI at a minimum. If it's not a pertinent use case, this is one way to try and make sure that we have, you know, something that's a little, it's not a, you know, it's not like a broad spectrum antibiotic trying to solve a problem. We're not sure exactly what it is. I mean, it's very, it can be much more targeted to where we need to implement and who has to be involved in that implementation. I'm kind of riffing off of the point that Leslie just made, you know, that capacity and shifting and kind of labor is something to take a look at. And I would think further, there should be some dimension of USCDI that's speaking to, you know, which developers or which users need to actually do this, which gets back to the use case conversation that Eric introduced and I think now got up on the wall for us.
That's a great point. That actually might be another way through the gate into stage 6. And it's not that everybody has put this into use, it's that the people who need it have put it into use. I don't know. Anyway, Stephen.
I had largely a process question. I appreciated that Eric put his thoughts down in the comments window. This came up on the high-tech meeting this morning about the relative merits of using the comments window as members of the committee, or in this case, the task force. We don't need to belabor the point here, but it'd be nice if Lauren and the various co-chairs could get together and come up with clear guidance for all of us for how best to use the chat and public comments window during, you know, both the high tech and the task force meetings.
Okay. And this is Lauren. We can certainly send some additional guidance up. But just as a quick note, we do consider any comments that are submitted from the public to that chat window. They will be considered public comments. They will be a part of the official transcripts and summary of the meeting, as well as any information or notes that the committee members put in there. So they are captured. So we'll clarify moving forward.
Great. And Lauren, another question for you. How are we doing on our time and public comment periods and so on?
Yep. So we're just about there now. So if you're at a a good breaking point. Why don't we go ahead and break for public comment now, and then Terry or Christina, I'll let you wrap up with any final action items or next steps. Is that okay?
Great.
Okay. Thank you. Operator, can you please open the line for public comments?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key.
Thank you. And we will remind everyone to please keep their comments to no more than 3 minutes. Operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are no comments in the queue at this time.
Okay. We'll circle back to see if there are any other comments. Terry, did you want to continue the discussion, or after public comments, should we just go ahead and wrap up?
Well, we need every minute we've got. Sorry, gang.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. Operator, just to confirm, any other additional comments in the queue?
No comments in the queue at this time.
Okay. Then why don't we resume, and Terry, I'll give you back 5 minutes.
Okay. Is there a way we can pull the homework, the pending slide that didn't get included in everyone's deck? That one. Yes, thanks. Here's just some thoughts about some other issues that we might want to begin thinking about. So part of the homework is, when do we think about these, and can we do it in our committee calls and our homework? Or, as someone had previously suggested, what about subcommittees taking on a particular issue, not necessarily these, but any of the ones we raised today? And so maybe some discussion on that. Eric?
Yeah, so this is actually something I've done for prior task force I've had the honor of sitting on as well. What I've often done is, rather than just responding based on my knowledge or my organization's knowledge, is I actually would love to be able to share this slide in particular with some of the communities that Sequoia helps facilitate, like Health Exchange and Care Equality and others, and just actually ask them and then take the results back and aggregate those and share them with this task force, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and Lauren, there's no limit on the sharing of these slides. They're public domain.
Yep, this is all public information.
Wonderful. Then please pass it around, Eric, to whomever you can find.
Okay. Well, very good. Now I'll do that, and then try to bring the results of that back to this work group for their consideration.
Yeah, great. And Stephen?
I think, my preference personally would be to err on the side of doing more homework rather than trying to schedule additional subcommittees, just because of the challenges of making the time. I was impressed this morning that the work of, our task force and the TEF task force, while it engendered a lot of discussion, there was not really ample time to consider modifications in the larger committee. So I just fear that if we push things down to a subcommittee, something similar could happen, that the members of the subcommittee would end up developing the near final product, and it would be harder for people who weren't participating to really have much of an impact. So I think if we can commit to doing a little bit more homework and then working through the issues together, that will improve the representation in the final product.
Okay. No, that's fine. We're trying to strike the balance between being respectful of your time, already imposing on it with the homework. And I think your point about subcommittees is well taken. So unless there's somebody who really wants to run a subcommittee, and you can certainly speak up now, we're taking volunteers, then we'll continue to pile on the homework and plow through it during the meetings. Christina, what about that?
Sounds great.
It's still snowing in D.C.?
It is. It's supposed to snow till 11.
Okay.
All our snow just in this March day.
Good. It's just started in Boston. So. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. This has been a fantastic discussion. I think my brain hurts after all of this. It's going to take a while to pull this together. But thank you all. Although it doesn't look like we achieved any specific target today, I think we made great strides towards many of them. So thank you all.
Hey, Terry, if I could make one parting comment. This is Eric Evelyn.
Yes, please.
I just want to mention, too, I'm actually not really in agreement with the next to last bullet or the last major bullet where it says regulatory body oversight required.
Okay.
There, I think actually it's good to probably break that down into oversight versus actual implementation work. I see that being kind of a joint effort where the regulatory body oversees this, but actually has a convening organization or subcommittees or whatever the case would be to actually work very broadly to help implement and oversee this in detail.
Great. Please send this in. I think we've made a great strides on redoing this slide. So the only two bullets that didn't get touched were the two in the middle, which are pretty vanilla. So great. So I think we'll end up with a much better charge, and maybe we did accomplish something today. Good work. All right. Well, again, thank you all. And Lauren, I think we'll give them back 3 seconds. No, we won't. We'll burn an additional 3 seconds. Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone, for your time today.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.